Welcome to a psychodelicious conversation on mental health issues and trends from two local mental health professionals in the greater Lansing area. I'm Michael Stratton, LMSW.
And I'm Morgan Bowen, DNP, PMHNP, and we're here to provide you with a deep dive into the human experience of consciousness and beyond. Our aim is to be educational and entertaining, so just kick back and open your ears and your minds.
Hey, I'm Mike Stratton.
And I'm Morgan Bowen.
And this is the Psychodelicious episode number two of a two-parter. If you haven't listened to the first part, and the title of this one is, what is our title?
Our working title is Zeitgeist. Socioeconomic and Political Forces Impacting Mental Health Treatment.
Yeah, and usually what we do and what we break this down is that we describe the issue itself in the first episode and then try to come more into the line of solutions in the second episode. So if it felt overwhelming to you, the first episode, it felt overwhelming to me.
Me too, although I think I might have been the overwhelm.
That would be kind of the point as to why you brought it up, though,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it is overwhelming. Yeah, I mean, it really is overwhelming.
If it's got you guys overwhelmed, it's definitely got other people overwhelmed.
We can compare this, what we're living through right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, just remember what it felt like the week after 9/11, which was, it was like there was your life before 9/11, and then 9/11 happened, and then your life afterwards. And the way it felt, the way it landed on our psyches and on just the way it felt to be an American at that time, it was really, really different.
What about the Vietnam era?
Well, that was so ever-present for years. It was definitely there. And the idea of like, okay, there's a draft and I'm going to be signing up for the draft when I turn 16 and my number is going to be pulled when I'm 18. Mm-hmm. All of that was definitely weighing on me. I was the last year where they actually did a draft. Mm. And they televised it. That's my memory, is that they televised it. I was in the dorm. We watched the show. My number was 32.
You mean they would televise like the draft,
pulling the
numbers?
Lottery. Like, here's the date. Here's the date. So I was 32. They usually would call in the first 100 numbers. So it was like, oh no, here it comes. But
how often would they do it?
Yearly. They did it once a year. Yeah.
Wow.
But this was the first year that they didn't call us in. Hmm. So every time I meet a veteran, I say, thank you. I feel like you served for me, mm-hmm. because I didn't have to go, but that was definitely, and these things have occurred throughout history, so not just 9/11.
Yeah, well, I think that's the most recent. Well, COVID, sure.
COVID's another mm-hmm. one of like, this is what it felt like one week and then the next week after COVID hit. And I remember telling people like, this might go on for 2 or 3 weeks, and then it went on for a couple of years. And are we really even out of it yet?
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, and I, generationally, my parents are, I think they're older than you. Both my parents were born in 1947.
Yeah.
So they were, in the, and my father was in school. I mean, he was in college. So that changed his, changed the number for him for the draft. And, but just that the cultural dis-ease at that time, I would say conservative, probably, more people supporting the military, supporting the presence in Vietnam, and then the anti-war movement seemed, at least looking backwards from, my generation, that was so tense. And there, the shootings at Wake Forest or
Kent State. It was very much an us and them kind of feeling.
Yeah,
and usually you could tell people by the length of their hair.
Yeah.
Whether they were hippies or mm-hmm. if they were people that were, had short haircuts. And so there was a real us and them kind of feeling. And it wasn't just the war, but it was also civil rights, the whole civil rights thing, that which had really heated up in the early 60s and through the later 60s. And then the 70s were comparatively calm. I mean, Watergate was the big thing at that mm-hmm. point. But there's mm-hmm. always been something in history. Something's always happening. So this is a personal story. I was out to lunch with my daughter. This was a month or so ago, a couple months ago. I just saw her yesterday, so it's not like I only see her every other month. But anyway, but she was talking to me about what's going on, and she was very freaked out. And I shared, I'm freaked out too. And I just said, every time something progressive has happened in this country, where people are given more rights. It's been preceded by some terrible, I'm going to use the word BS, because I'm known to swear on this show sometimes.
And I'm just, in season two.
It's been in season two. But it's been preceded by some terrible BS, and this is the BS. This is what we're living through. And I really do have faith that we're going to come through this. I think America is better than this, what we're going through now. And at some point,
Large amount of Americans, in fact, maybe the majority of Americans, I would say voted for this, mm-hmm. but that are celebrating, that they've reclaimed that the country, the American values, traditional mm-hmm. things. And, you know, I don't have any judgment about that sense for them.
Well, there's a lot of anecdotal kind of things about people that, effed around and found out, realizing oh my gosh, this isn't what I voted for. And the current president's numbers are low. And I don't know this recent Charlie Kirk assassination, what that will do to his popularity. The very, very cynical part of me believes that it'll boost his popularity. I don't know. We'll live to see it, hopefully. but how this impacts on the mental health and the people that come to see us in that state of hopelessness or powerlessness, or like you mentioned the first part, you know, how many clients do you have that use Medicaid?
A lot. And unfortunately, that's not even the level of conversation that I'm having with them. I don't mm-hmm. think people, you know, at least the people that I've seen, you know, folks with Medicaid have difficult lives. So it's, there's a lot of things in their mind of survival and what's happening day to day and how am I going to have enough money to eat and, you know, just live life. So the larger forces are, you know, it's not like they don't pay attention to them, but it's like, you know, I got bigger fish to fry. I got to figure out how I'm going to, you know, get food on the table for my kids and deal with this and deal with that. So, but I'm thinking about what's going to happen with Medicaid being severely limited, and we're not even really sure what that's going to look like. But I will say, you know, like, so there's large changes that are happening in Medicaid in Michigan. If people don't know, every state has a different Medicaid. There are federal dollars that come, but the state is the one that administers them through programs. There's a lot of commonalities. But Michigan Medicaid is trying to streamline their process, as a lot of states are, to set up the framework that they're going to be able to eliminate people off of Medicaid. Mm. And so, I mean, it's not like you can just say, hey, 750,000 people, you no longer have Medicaid. They have to figure out, and this is what I've been saying, and it's so cynical and terrible, but they have to trim the fat. They got to, you know, who deserves the Medicaid and who doesn't deserve the Medicaid. And so how do you decide that? How do you decide that? I mean, I think the reigning idea on maybe the larger cultural idea is that, you know, you're going to take away from the people that don't deserve it. Well, mm-hmm. how do you really make that choice? So, you know, there's income requirements, there's, you know, work requirements that are being put in, which, frankly, this road has been traveled before. But so... Mm-hmm. My clients are not thinking about it. I'm thinking about it. And what's going to happen to those people? What's going to happen to the, you know, it's a huge amount of people in our state that are not going to have health care. And then there's also the changes that are happening on the exchange, which is Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act. For people that get insurance off the exchange, the subsidies are expiring and the cost is going way, way up with the things that are happening in 2026. That's a projection. I've heard anywhere from a 200% increase in the cost, which is already pretty significant, to higher, 300, as well as fewer plans in the market. A lot of the insurers are just not going to have plans on the marketplace because it's not going to make them any money. It's not worth it for them. Mm-hmm. The ACA had some requirements about if you were going to accept federal dollars, you had to have a certain amount of stake in the exchange. Mm-hmm. So the ACA remains, but it, you know, has, I don't think it's a secret that the Republicans have been dead set on dismantling it for a long time.
Oh yeah, since his first administration, the famous John McCain putting his thumb down when he voted down the idea of let's get rid of Obamacare.
But I think that is a really, you know, that was an inflection point. I mean, that was when we were still sort of talking to each other, Democrats and Republicans. So in terms of how, you know, this episode is about how these larger political and social forces are going to affect mental health treatment. I mean, one of the major things is access to mental health treatment. A lot of people who are receiving treatment are no longer going to receive treatment because they don't have insurance. Mm-hmm. And that will affect the health of our state. It'll affect the health of the people. It will affect the health of our communities. And it will certainly affect the larger public health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we were talking about kind of like personal stories as well as like client stories. I have a huge amount of people who qualify for Medicaid because of the expansion that happened. It extended the income limit. So people who are, you know, certainly the working poor, but, you know, the income limits for Medicaid prior to the expansion were the federal poverty line, which is very, very low. So I would say, you know, I'm just kind of guesstimating in my client base, probably at least 50% of my clients that have Medicaid are probably going to end up not having Medicaid in a year and a half or so.
Do you have an idea of what you're going to do?
Well, this is why I'm thinking about it, because I don't. I mean, you know, and you're a clinician. So, I mean, you know, people do sliding scales. People do... you know, all sorts of things. But this also brings up when these things change, the clinician mix is going to change. There's already a whole lot of people that just, I would say the majority of at least prescribing folks in this community, psychiatric prescribers, do not take Medicaid already. Mm-hmm. And more is happening. Like clinics that kind of were on the fence are going to not take Medicaid. I have received kind of commentary from people I work with that, you know, maybe you should not take Medicaid. And I just, you know, fundamentally, ethically, as a clinician, like that just goes against my value system. Mm-hmm. But I got to pay my bill. You know, you got to do what
that's a dilemma.
It is a dilemma.
You mentioned sliding scale and pro bono. That was something I did used to do in my earlier career. I'm at the end of, towards the end, I'm not at the end of my career, but towards the, you know, the very last couple years or so.
You're
going to
be doing
career.
Therapy on your deathbed.
maybe.
How do you feel about my death?
That's just disturbing.
Can't take him anywhere nice.
No.
No. That would be a good question. If it got to that point. Okay, I lost the track of what I was talking about.
We were talking about sliding scale.
Yeah. I don't offer that currently. I do private pay and I do insurance, and only certain insurances. And there's other insurances that I'm not in their network. They've closed the network for some insurances. They're not allowing new clinicians in or old clinicians in. So
that is common, and correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot, you know, as you move towards retirement or at least older age, because really, I mean, you can do this job as long as you have your mind, you can, you know, and a lot of people go into part-time, they have a handful of clients maybe that they keep seeing, but you don't want to be working all the time. I mean, I see like 16, you know, patients a day. It's, you know, I mean, that's a grind.
Yeah, and my top is 4 a day. So, but I do hour long sessions.
You do therapy and I do medication management, but I mean,
50 minute hour.
Yeah.
And I only work 4 days a week, and I'm trying to take more time off and all those kinds of things, you know, those factors as you get older so that you can have a longer career.
And you can also use your time to give back to your community in other ways. I mean, you do a podcast, you know, you're community minded.
Wait,
you
what
are
is this?
You do I mean, a te- you do a radio program, you know.
Technically, Morgan's doing it today, but you know. but he is correct. Yes, you are on a podcast at this point.
You're on
all right.
My
it's
podcast.
Good, it's good to know. Yeah, the other radio station that I'm connected to that I do a jazz program for, it's called The Groove Supreme.
And you don't get a paid dime.
Well, you know, it's
I never got paid here,
but I do get paid there.
Oh, I see.
But they're cutting their funding. The government has rescinded money that has been granted to it. So they've run into a $1.6 million shortfall. A lot of that's been made up already because there's been a plea that's been put out. We're down to, we need to raise $500,000 between now and June. So in the next, whatever that is, 9 months, basically, we got to come up with $500,000 to continue to have local programming or at that point.
Well, I know you well enough to know that you would be willing to do it for absolutely free because you did this, it for many years.
So I did it for many years, but this episode can never go.
Don't tell Mike's wife. Yeah.
She knew I did it for free. But anyway.
Well, you did it for the love of jazz.
Well, but we're far off.
Thinking about how this is affecting the mental health of clients, I mean, is this these larger, how do people talk about it with you? Or is, you know, what has been your experience with that?
Well, some people come right in. They've been reading the headlines. That's one of the biggest things they want to talk about right away. And often it's they've been traumatized by something else, but this is triggering for them in some way. So one of the things that I stress big time, because we try to talk about solutions at this point, is to do self-care. Self-care is so important. And self-care at the level of being physically moving your body, taking walks, having quiet time for yourself, talking about doing meditation, taking breaks for yourself, taking media breaks for yourself, doing all those kinds of things are really, really important. Breathing exercises, you know, helping them calm down their whole nervous system, all that kind of stuff are things that we focused on. And then if they are flooding themselves with digital media to encourage, like, well, why don't you just check in once a day with the BBC or just read the New York Times or just try to limit that in terms of what it is that you're bringing in, what is it that's causing you the most stress about this? And this may be my white privilege. I was thinking this, just the optimism, you know, the idea that it's going to get better, because I think it is. I really do. My cousin who lives out on the West Coast, and she is transgender, and she said to me once, she said, how can you believe this? How can you believe it's going to get better? And I said, I still have a choice. I still have a choice to believe it's going to get better or it's going to get worse. And how does it feel in inside of me to just live inside the idea of, like, it's just going to keep getting worse. It's just, there's nothing else I can do. But if you can do what you can do, so give, if you want to give money to certain candidates or certain causes, pick your causes, just like you said. If you want to demonstrate, I've attended demonstrations. I've called our congressman to say, hey, you have a chance to really be a hero here.
Are you talking about Tom Barrett?
Yes. Yes. I've called him and left that message. And
did he call you back?
No.
It's been a common theme.
Yeah, right, right. The other thing, and I feel like this is an important thing to tell. I heard this a week or so ago. Maybe I've repeated it to you already, Morgan, but I just loved it. It's a story about the Buddha. A student comes to the Buddha, and he's holding a cup of coffee, and the Buddha says something like, if someone bumps your arm and coffee spills out of your cup, why does the coffee leave your cup? And the student says, well, because somebody bumped my arm. And he said, no, the coffee leaves your cup because that's what's in the cup. Mm. If it had been water in the cup, the water would have spilled out. But it's not that you get bumped. It's what you're holding. So what are you carrying? If I'm carrying nothing but despair and rage, if I'm carrying nothing but despair and rage and hopelessness, that's what's going to come out when I'm bumped. And we're all going to get bumped. We're all going to get bumped in life. That's just a fact of life. But if I'm holding on to optimism, if I'm holding on to an appreciation of beauty and connection and a sense of gratitude, that's what's going to come out. And that's what I try to be mindful about, holding on to those things, even in the face of this
situation.
The situation that we're going through right now. And so
that's really nice. It's very lovely. I mean, it's
punchy Mike becomes philosophical Mike.
Yeah, no, that was helpful. I felt that was calming for me.
The Buddha helps. Yes.
It was good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A Psycho Delicious conversation is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is no substitute for therapy and should not be treated as such. If you feel a need for real therapy, you should consult your local provider, Google therapy or therapists in your area, check with community mental health or a suicide hotline if you are feeling suicidal.
Mike and Morgan welcome your questions, feedback, or dilemmas. Feel free to send us an email at apsychodeliciousconversation@gmail.com. That is a psychodelicious, psychodeliciousconversation@gmail.com.
The views expressed on this podcast are solely the opinions of Mike Stratton and Morgan Bowen, and do not reflect the views or opinions of any site broadcasting this podcast. Replication of this podcast without written permission is strictly prohibited.